Well, ESG seems a little greenwashed up at the moment. There's been more trouble at Germany's biggest bank. For the second time in a month, authorities raided scandal-plagued Deutsche Bank's Frankfurt HQ. This time, it was to investigate allegations that DWS, an asset management subsidiary of DB, has been greenwashing, also known as misleading investors about its environmental, social, and corporate governance, or ESG. And in the fallout, the CEO of DWS has said he would step down. It's a very interesting time for ESG because we've also seen since the start of the year, Shell share price is up more than 40%, chemicals and GMO seed producer Bayer has gained 40% too, and shares in defense contractor Thales are 55% higher. These are incredible gains over a period when the MSCI World Index is down around 15%. And what's notable is that these stocks are all considered negatively from an ESG screening perspective. Well, I'm joined now by Alec Cutler, who's a manager of the Orbis Global Balance Fund at Allen Gray. And Alec, great pleasure to have you on the show. When we talk about ESG now, at the BCI conference recently, it was just asset manager after asset manager saying that this is the big theme of the moment. How much of this is real change and how much of this is just greenwashing, to my earlier points?
I think it's quite a bit of both. For the last 5, 6, 7 years now, it's all been, this is the big thing. We're going to make great change. And we saw a lot of magic wands getting waved around by ESG proponents, many of whom had different and differing agendas. We saw governments reacting to that. And, you know, governments are always looking at the popularity contest. Reacting and creating rules. And then you had a lot of pressure on the investment management industry, who, you know, I'm part of that. But one of the things I guess I'm not super proud of is we've got a great history of turning around challenges into marketing opportunities. And I think that there's some of that's been going on as well. So the upshot of it all is that you know, what I call ESG version one, and I hope it's version one, I hope there's a version two, has really missed the mark, and we're seeing the implications of that, whether it be through higher energy prices, food prices, the botched energy transition, and some of the defense issues we're seeing.
So in version 1.0 means that you still believe ultimately in the spirit of what the world is trying to achieve by directing capital towards sectors that are ultimately going to help shift us away from potentially boiling ourselves to death and all of those other things that sit in the ESG bucket. But this recent rally in the so-called non-ESG sectors, it certainly highlighted some shortcomings in the way ESG is currently applied. And to your points around just using it as marketing versus actually believing in the spirit of it, how would a version 2.0, if you were to go in that direction of environmental, social, governance, screening, and factor-type investing be applied?
Yeah, so we do believe in it. We believe in the long-term goals here, but you know, we should be determining what the right long-term thing is and then managing skillfully and inclusively to get there. Version 2.0 needs to be much more inclusive. It just can't be, you know, we hate energy companies, we hate anybody who creates carbon, just to take the E part, and ignore them and pretend that you can make them go away. And treat them as part of the solution. You need to include the 70% of the world that's never flown in an airplane. And otherwise, you know, if you don't talk to the solutions providers and treat them that way, then you're going to have what we have now with high energy and food prices. And if you don't include the 70% of the world that's still trying to develop, you're just coming across looking patronizing and like the colonialists that, you know, the countries that are really pushing ESG right now had a habit of being. So version 2.0 needs to be more inclusive, needs to be more long-termist, needs to be more focused on the facts and the practicalities of what can and can't be done in a short, medium, and long term.
And I was chatting to the CEO of 91, Hendrik de Toy, recently about this, and he said, you know, any effort that doesn't work for the whole world will fail everywhere. So you really do need buy-in on all of this. When we talk about net zero and everyone you know, and their donkey saying, well, we're going to get to net zero by 2050. It's easy to say that. It's one of those long-term goals that as a management team, you're probably three, four, maybe five management teams away from ever having to be accountable for that statement. So it's difficult from the outside not to be cynical. But what I really liked about what Hendrik said, he says, it's not about excluding the brown and favoring the green. It's about supporting the brown as it works to become greener. Would you go along with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely, and that's where those returns that you quoted from the beginning came from, and that's the world is starting to recognize that, you know, you need natural gas in order to get to where we want to go, and you need those who make gas turbines and nuclear steam turbines to continue to make gas turbines and nuclear steam turbines. You can't just will an entire sector away. You have to work with that sector to get to where you want to go.
As an asset manager and one of the top and biggest asset managers, certainly in South Africa, what do you see as your role in helping drive the creation of a version 2.0 in terms of a better ESG and a more nuanced and frankly more practical way of approaching this global mission?
One is promoting what we believe is responsible investing over, you know, sticking a sustainable or ESG or green label on a fund, and then divesting and running away from the problem and talking about how great your stats are, is to really get down and in the weeds with companies and work with them to improve. You know, we've owned Drax, which used to be the biggest carbon polluter in Europe, to shift from coal to biomass, and that's, we did that because that was the right thing to do for shareholders, the right thing to do for our clients who own our funds, but it's also the right thing to do for the world.
And I like that approach because I've seen some asset managers, as you say, to your earlier point, just sell out and demonstrate their clean and green credentials. But you haven't done anything in terms of moving the needle on the existing problem. And one looks here at coal, for example, as well. You know, it's one thing for a major coal player, and I'm going to single out an Anglo here. You know, it's divested its thermal coal operations to Thungela, which is listed and well regulated. But what's to stop an operation from selling off to an unlisted, less scrupulous operator that doesn't care about the ESG issues, doesn't care about the communities and polluting water, and doesn't care about any of the other environmental concerns? And then it's off the radar, and the problem is still there. So for me, the key test really has to be whether or not asset managers, as custodians of pensioners and ordinary savers' capital, are really engaging with the issues, are engaging, as you say, in the weeds of the C-suites and the board. Are they walking and talking the talk here when it comes to thinking about the long-term risks that, I mean, ultimately, if you speak of the spirit of ESG, these are long-term risks to many businesses and many business models.
Yes, and while I think many funds that put a sustainable label on their fund are trying to figure out how they can wangle into buying energy stocks now because they're doing well, you know, that divestment approach put tons of pressure on the Shells and BPs of the world to divest, and you know, the people were high-fiving themselves that BP and Shell are divesting out of, say, Iraq, but they don't pay attention to the fact that that oil is still coming out. It's just coming out and now being overseen by the Russians and the Chinese that moved right in. And to your point, I think, you know, you can, it's very easy to go to London and protest an annual general meeting for BP. It's a lot harder to go to Beijing and protest a Sinopec or a Sinook.
I think those are very good points as well. And also what this has done, and we're seeing it now, is it's broken the traditional CapEx cycle in energy markets. You would see investment in new fields based on supply and demand as supply tightened and demand increased, you'd see increased CapEx, and eventually that pendulum would swing too far, and then the price would decline and CapEx would roll back. And it's a carefully choreographed dance that kept energy prices within reasonable limits and levels. Now that seems to be broken because we've been focusing on one part of the equation to the detriment of all others. It's an extremely complex equation to balance, though, Alec. And my real concern is that governments, to your earlier point, love to play the popularity contest. They tend not to look at some of the unintended consequences.
Yes, and this is, we should view what's happening now as a wake-up call to that complexity, and that this isn't a matter of, this kind of Silicon Valley, well, if you dream it up, you can make it happen thing. That this is the real world. This is energy. This is food. This is security. And it is complex. And version 2.0 needs to pay heed to that and involve the parties that need to be involved to create solutions, not just more problems. So, I can't just say that ESG 1.0, if that's the way we want to go with it, has been all negative. It's increased awareness mainly. But it's created these issues that are popping up now. And if we don't pay attention to them and change course, as you say, the cure for high oil prices used to be high oil prices. But with ESG, the major integrators of the world are not increasing their spending because they've been forced either through shareholders or, in the case of Shell, the court in The Hague, to cut back on production. So, we've made this mess, and we need to solve this mess.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks like this could be the time for to use the common vernacular for these things, the great green reset, if we were to be honest with ourselves. Alec Cutler, thank you very much, manager of the Orbis Global Balanced Fund, on ESG, its evolution, and how we can look to do things better in the future here on Hot Business.